Rays Radio Network proudly presents This Week in Rays Baseball.
Drilled to center field and deep. Back on it is Eaton. To the track. To the wall. It's gone! Evan Longoria with a two-run home run to straightaway center. And he gives the Rays a 6-4 lead here in the ninth.
Coming up, we'll recap the action from this past week, take a look around Major League Baseball, and sit down for in-depth interviews with the biggest names in the game.
1-2. Got a pitch. Got him swinging, and the ball game is over as Jake McGee strikes out the side in the ninth inning.
Here's your host, Neil Solons.
And hi, everybody. Welcome to our show. This week, we'll sit down with Nathan Karns. We'll look back on the 2015 draft and visit with Matt Joyce about his return to Tropicana Field, plus much, much more. We start with highlights from the week gone by. Sunday, the Rays had a chance to win a series against Seattle. And on this day, the Rays had the right guy on the mound.
Archer ready? The 0-2 pitch. Swing and a miss. He struck him out. So Chris Benz, who doesn't totally break, picks up his 11th strikeout of the afternoon. And the Rays leave with the lead.
Chris Archer did something that hadn't been done. He recorded double-digit strikeouts for a third straight game without walking a batter. The Rays closed a 7-3 road trip with a 3-1 win over the Mariners. Monday, the Rays were off as the MLB draft began. Tampa Bay took Garrett Whitley in the opening round, and we'll have more on that later. Tuesday, the Rays opened an 8-game homestand against the Angels by placing Jake Odorizzi on the DL with an oblique strain. Evan Longoria, battling a sore left wrist, didn't start for a third straight game. Meanwhile, the Angels lineup was very productive.
Here's the 0-1. Calhoun bounces one to the right side. It's through. That'll open it up. Base hit. Ibar scores. Here comes Trout, and he's in. Throw goes into second. Two-run single for Calhoun. It's now 7-2 Angels. And that's the dagger.
They was, and the Angels collected 15 hits, and they beat the Rays 8-2. Now Wednesday, the Rays bounced back as Longoria returned to the lineup.
First pitch to Evan on its way, and it's lifted in the air to left field. Back at it is Matt Joyce. Back to the wall, and it's gone! Evan Longoria on the first pitch he sees here in the third gives the Rays the lead again. It's 3-2.
Erasmo Ramirez won his third straight start as he and four relievers held the Angels in check in what was a 4-2 Tampa Bay win. Now, Thursday, the Rays were looking to win a series, and after this play in the sixth kept the Rays in front 2-1, it looked like the Rays were going to do exactly that.
Swing and a high pop up to center. Not all that deep. Kiermaier getting underneath it in front of the burst. It's going to make the catch. Pujols is going to come down. Here comes the throw to the plate, and he is out at the plate! Out at the plate. What a throw by Kiermaier as he throws out Pujols, and that should retire the side.
But the Angels scored three in the seventh, two in the ninth, and beat the Rays 6-2. After the game, the Rays made several roster moves, adding three pitchers and designating catcher Bobby Wilson for assignment. Friday, the Rays opened a series against Chicago. Matt Andrees got the first start in place of Odorizzi and got some strong support offensively.
The 2-2 to Butler, swinging a line drive to center field, charging as Eaton still coming in. The ball lands in front of a base hit. Rivera scores the sixth run. Down to third goes Kiermaier, and Butler's driven in another, and it's 6-2 Rays.
Joey Butler had 3 of 14 hits for the Rays. Matt Andrees earned his first major league win in a 7-5 victory over Chicago. And then yesterday, Chris Archer took the mound after his historic run. This turned out to be a seesaw battle with the Rays taking the lead for good in the bottom of the eighth.
The pitch on the way. Swinging a slow ground ball, headed for the middle. To his left, Ramirez flips to second. He rolls it away to the middle of the diamond. And here comes Souza Jr. to score. And the Rays have taken a 5-4 lead. The White Sox implode defensively for the second time today. And the Rays have a one-run lead.
And the Rays move to 5 over 500 and a virtual tie up top the American League East with the 5-4 victory over Chicago. Today we raise up for Tavoris and Big Brothers Big Sisters. Big Brothers Big Sisters provides children facing adversity like Tavoris with relationships that change their lives forever. The Rays provide more than $100,000 in match support for the organization and activities for bigs and littles. How do you raise up? This is This Week in Rays Baseball. Coming up, we'll chat with Nathan Karns as the Rays get set to take on his former organization, the Nationals, beginning tomorrow. That's coming up next on the Rays Baseball Network. We continue on This Week in Rays Baseball, and our featured guest this week is Nathan Karns. Nathan, this was draft week for so many high school and college players. Can you remember back to your draft week in 2009? You were a 12th-round pick. What do you remember most about that time?
Just waiting around to get my name called. And, you know, when it happened, it's It's a very special moment for, you know, not only myself, but, you know, everyone involved in the draft, from, you know, the organization to the actual player themselves. So, I mean, it's just a goal that, you know, a lot of us work for our whole lives. And, you know, I had the opportunity to get selected. And, you know, it's a great feeling knowing that, you know, a team wants you to be a part of the organization and that you're capable of being a professional baseball player. So it's very special.
Draft has changed over the years. Were you on the computer watching pick by pick? Do you remember anything as particular about it?
I was really antsy. I tried not to sit there and watch pick by pick. So I just kind of, you know, my mom and dad were glued to the computer at that time. In the 12th round, they don't show that on TV. So I was just kind of sitting back and just waiting to hear from, you know, neither my agent or get the phone call, because I couldn't sit there and watch pick by pick go by. So I just had to distance myself, watch a little TV, go outside. And then when it eventually happened, it was just, you know, a very special moment.
When did you decide growing up that you wanted to be a Major League Baseball player? Because you played a lot of football in high school, too. You were a captain in both sports in high school.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, I wanted to play both growing up. I wanted to go to school, play both. But, you know, eventually when I think my junior year, I started getting some recognition from professional teams. And, you know, to that point, I didn't really think of myself of possibly being drafted. So once that happened, I kind of steered away from football a little bit. You know, it was tough on my body, especially being in Texas. They're pretty proud of their football. So, you know, I felt like it was a smart decision. And then, you know, unfortunately, it didn't work out in high school. And then I went to college and continued to grow as a player, and then eventually had the opportunity to get selected by the Nationals. So, you know, it's been one heck of a journey, but, you know, it's been very, very special to me, and it's made me who I am today.
As a football player, or as someone who played football, how does that help you in baseball, and how do you have to be different playing baseball?
I think football just allowed me to be a little bit tougher mentally. Because, you know, in football, you're not the biggest guy on the field. There's rarely ever that guy who's the biggest guy on the field. So, you know, just going up against larger competition, you know, you just kind of grow into being comfortable with what you have and what you're capable of. And that translates to baseball. I mean, for pitchers, you know, just because you don't throw 96 or 100 doesn't mean you can't get people out. So just being comfortable with, you know, what you're capable of is what made me a better baseball player from football.
Nathan Carr's with us on This Week in Rays Baseball. Now, as you went through the Nationals chain, you had to battle injury. You missed a season. And, look, you've got a lot of guys on this roster who are dealing with it. What did you learn going through that process, and how challenging was it to miss an entire year of baseball?
It took from it was it's a challenging process. It really is. I mean, every day you're doing a lot of the same things over and over. You're rehabbing. You grow further from the actually playing. I mean, you're sitting there, your day consists of rehabilitation, ice, do it all over again, over and over and over for a whole year while everyone else is out there playing the game that, you know, you grow up playing and love to play. And, you know, you just sit back and watch everyone else advance in their career, and you're kind of sidelined sitting there, you know, in a holding pattern. So that, I would say that's the most difficult part, is just knowing that you can't go out and play and you're watching everyone else go out there and do what they love to do. And, you know, you just have to remind yourself that your day is coming, and you got to take it one day at a time until that happens.
Does it create a greater appreciation for the game, or more of a love of the game because it's taken away?
Definitely. I would say as close as I've gotten to where I can't play this game anymore. So not being able to play, really, you know, I found out for myself how much I miss the game and how much it means to me. And Just having the second chance just gives me a greater appreciation of what I have right now.
You got your first call-up with the Nationals, your original organization. What do you remember about the call-up and then your first appearance?
First thing I remember about it was I was supposed to pitch the day I found out I was going up. I was supposed to pitch a morning game, 11 o'clock. I remember rolling into the ballpark, and as soon as I stepped in the clubhouse, I was grabbed by my pitching coach, which at the time was Paul Menhart. And he brought me in, sat down with the manager at the time, Lee Croy, and he was now the bullpen coach for the Nationals. They sat down and told me that that they were going to make an adjustment. I wasn't going to pitch that day. I was going to actually chart the Baltimore game because they've said their lineup was similar to what they wanted me to face was a team from Akron in the Eastern League. Kind of puzzled me for a minute. I was like, well, how is this? I mean, okay, I'll sit inside in the AC and chart a big league game, and I don't know how this is going to help me for a double-A squad, but, you know, I'll do what you want. And they kind of try to, you know, make me buy into it a little more, and then eventually he's like, well, really, we need you to scout them because you're going to be pitching against them tomorrow. So with that, it was just a whirlwind. I mean, double-A, I still thought, you know, I'd still at least need to be in triple-A before I get in the call. I ran out to call my parents. I was unable to reach them each five times in a row, and then finally got the hold of my father and, you know, broke the good news to them. And at first he thought I was joking. He's like, are you joking? You're supposed to be pitching today. So it was a fun time. And, you know, once I really started sinking in, you know, I was like, I got to get my butt to D.C. So I drove 2.5 hours from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania to Washington, D.C. And, I mean, it was just a whirlwind of a day.
What do you remember about the first appearance?
There was a rain delay. So, you know, I was ready to go and, you know, just about to go out and start warming up. And they're like, hey, we're pulling the tarp out. We're going to wait a little longer. So, you know, the extra hour or so between the actual game time and then the rescheduled game time was, you know, a little nerve-wracking because I was ready to go. And then having to sit there, I was like, am I about to get washed out of my debut and all that? But it worked out. Faced the Orioles. And then I remember first hitter was Nate McLouth, and I got him out on a 2-0 fastball, ground ball to second base. So after that, it was just fast forward. It was the fastest game of my life.
You now will see the Nationals come to town next, but you won't face them because you pitch here today on Sunday. Do you want to face them? Or are you kind of disappointed you won't face them? What's your take on that?
I've been planning this for a long time, hoping to face them. I actually trained with their third baseman, Anthony Rendon, and, you know, we had a bet on, you know, he said he was going to try and bunt on me and then steal first pitch. So it was just things like that that we talked about, how fun it would be to face the guys that, you know, not only did I come in the organization with, but, you know, developed and worked my way up to the major league. So, you know, it's tough not being able to face your old organization, but I'm just going to have just as much fun sitting here supporting Steven Souza, who was also a National, and I guess you could say I'm going to live through him during the games.
Who besides Rendon are you close to? Obviously, you mentioned Matt Liekroyce, their bullpen coach, and he was the first guy to tell you you're going to the big leagues.
Mm-hmm. Trying to go through the roster right now. I had a roommate throughout the minor leagues, Aaron Barrett, who's in their bullpen. Blake Trinan, I got the privilege of playing with him in 2013 in Double-A, and I believe he's still up there. You know, they have so many young players, Michael Taylor in center, you know, nice to see Harper again. But like a lot of great guys there that were there when I was there, or, you know, some aren't there anymore. But, you know, just seeing the coaching staff, you know, the clubbies, all that, you know, people I grew familiar with, top to bottom, Mike Rizzo. So, I mean, there's a lot of familiar faces, but, you know, it's just a great, you know, it's funny how baseball brings us all back together somehow.
How's this first year been for you? Because, I mean, you start the season battling for a spot, and the next thing you know, you're almost near the top of the rotation because of all the injuries. Have you been able to soak it at all in at any point and kind of said, hey, this has gone fairly well?
I wouldn't say I've let it soaked in. It's just I've become more comfortable. You know, I'm still trying to figure out a lot of things up here, but, you know, it's been the approach coming into the season until actually starting the season has been completely unpredictable. I mean, to sit here and guess, you know, I'm trying for a fifth spot and then have all these injuries, you know, that's tough to deal with as a team, but we've done a really, really good job of just, you know, playing with the guys we have and competing. So, you know, it's, for me personally, it's been an enjoyable experience, but, you know, we're still trying to, our object is to get back into playoffs and contend for a championship. So, you know, it's still early in the season. I'm excited to see what happens for the remaining part of it.
And I think we all are, and you've had quite a year, not only on the mound, but off the field, too. You got engaged right before spring training started. Tell us a little bit about that.
I got engaged to the love of my life. I met her the actual first day I ever went to my second college, Texas Tech. You know, we stayed close for a very long time. In 2011, we decided to give it a shot. And, you know, now I can honestly say I have – you know, the love of my life is my fiance right now, and can't wait for December to get married. And it's just, you know, best for my best friend in life.
Can you share how you popped the question? Was anything creative? And when it was right before spring training, I know.
It was. You know, I had a lot of things planned out. It just timing was the issue. So I settled for a beach proposal over in before spring training. I recently got a GoPro camera, so I told her we're gonna go drive around on before camp started and just kind of, you know, try it out, try underwater, just try all these new things. And right before we left the beach, I said we need to get a to-go picture, and I said, you got to wave and say goodbye. And she's like, what are we saying goodbye to? And I was like, for you being single. And then I dropped down and asked her if she would marry me, and thankfully she said yes. So it's been a wonderful experience, and I'm still looking forward to the next chapter of my life.
Continued success. Good luck with the wedding in December, and thanks for joining us in This Week in Rays Baseball.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Nathan Kahn's with us. We'll continue right after this on the Rays Baseball Network. And on This Week in Rays Baseball, and joining us now, Director of Scouting, R.J. Harrison. R.J., you've had a couple of days to kind of separate yourself, so to speak, from the three-day Major League Baseball draft. As you look back at it, what did you like most about what occurred during those 3 days?
Well, I like that we got a lot of players that we really like, you know, and especially we started off well day one with Garrett Whitley and Chris Betts, two players that we've liked and for a while now, and we're, you know, in our wildest imagination didn't think that we would land both of them. So you end day one feeling really, really good, and that gives you momentum going into day two, and we kind of shifted gears there, and we took all college players on day two, and a lot of it was just that's the way it stacked up. We didn't see better high school options at each one of those rounds, so we loaded up especially some college hitters, and as well as some power arms.
You mentioned Whitley and Betts and the surprise of them both being there. Do you remember, you've been involved in all 20 Rays drafts, where early in the draft you were able to get the guys that you wanted that you really didn't expect would be there when you chose?
No, I can't ever remember that something like this where two guys literally that you would have considered for your first pick, that you end up getting them both. With that big a gap between your first pick and second pick, not having any sandwich picks or anything like that. So I think that, you know, we were very fortunate.
Obviously, you know, there's a long time because they're high school kids before the expectation of them getting to the big leagues, hopefully. But give our fans an idea as to what makes each of those kids potentially special.
Well, with Whitley, they're significant tools. When I say tools, I'm talking about the things, the run, throw, power, bat speed. And he's really an intelligent young man. He's a very impressive young guy, but he has the kind of athleticism and quick twitch, we would call it, to be able to keep up with a fast-paced game, and to be able to, once he starts to figure it out, he has the potential to skip a few grades, so to speak. It's very similar to when we took Rocco in 2000, and, you know, he went to the rookie league in Princeton and struggled. He spent a full year in the South Atlantic League and hit 248, I think, and had certainly glimmers of, you could see what he could become. But then it was that next year that he went from the California League to the Southern League to AAA all in 1 year. These kind of athletes, and I'm not trying to put any kind of timetable on Garrett Whitley, but that's what those type athletes can do. Once they start figuring it out, they can move pretty good.
And obviously understands why it's important to be patient, because you're going to see some growth moments with kids like he and Chris Betts. And also have to remember, they still haven't graduated high school, so you can't even get them on the field for a few weeks.
No, Chris graduates next week, the 17th, I believe, and then Garrett graduates the week after. So we're just going to slow it down, let them go through, enjoy the rest of their senior year in high school, and go through graduation, and then we'll hopefully get them down here and get them signed and get them down to Port Charlotte and get their careers started.
For some, careers are about to start. I mean, you've signed four of your top 10 already, and one of them being Brandon Coach, an interesting closer out of Dallas Baptist University.
Yeah, he's I saw him pitch this year, but the last time I saw him prior to this year was when he was an underclassman in high school, and he was a shortstop, and he was looked like he was going to be a prospect as a shortstop. He actually went to Dallas Baptist as a shortstop, was converted his freshman year, but he's got a big arm. He's got a good – he's got a above-average slider right now, and he's a guy that struck out a lot of hitters in college, and we anticipate he's going to strike out a lot of hitters in professional baseball.
And that's Rays Director of Scouting R.J. Harrison on the draft. And joining us now, the area scout for first-round pick Garrett Whitley, and that's Tim Alexander. Tim, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it, Neil.
Obviously, you put in a lot of time scouting Garrett Whitley. What, in your mind, makes this kid a special selection of first-round pick?
Well, I think, you know, everybody up here would agree. It's not like this guy wasn't unknown. I mean, he came on the scene, you know, the early last summer through our tryouts. And, you know, it's easy to see the tools. You know, he's got a lot of power. He's got speed, explosiveness, just a lot of tools you like to see in prospects.
You got to see him more than any other member of the Rays organization. I mean, he moved up late on a lot of draft boards. I'm sure not the Rays. They had an eye on him. But why do you think he took off in so many minds as kind of an up-and-comer in this draft class?
Well, I think he continued to show what separated him from others. And, again, you just go back to the tools, and he's got a good body and the explosiveness and the power that he possesses. And one of those things, it's not hard to see. Anybody who knows baseball at all could figure this one out.
One of the things that R.J. Harrison, the director of scouting for the Rays, touched on regarding you was you got to really know the family personally. And look, there's a lot of intangibles that go into whether a kid's going to be successful. And give us a feel for the Whitley family and why you think that may be a plus with this kid too.
Well, I mean, I think what separates him from others is, you know, the upbringing. He's got a great family. They're really balanced. They're level-headed. Very intelligent people who are humble but confident. And I just think it's a great support system for him. You know, it's rare to find all of that and combined with good tools. So, yeah, I'm blessed because the more you're around them, the more you want to be around them. And, you know, it's just a good experience for me and hopefully for them.
One thing that also stood out, at least hearing him speak on his conference call, was a passion for baseball. And I got a sense that the family is very passionate about the game, period. Is that the same sense that you got?
Yeah, I mean, I think Garrett really loves to play the game. But he's also one of those individuals that I think you put any sport in front of him, he likes to compete. So I think baseball's his ultimate love, but I think he just loves to compete at anything. You know, if it was marbles, I think he'd like to compete.
What did it mean to you to see the Rays make this pick? Because, you know, I would assume is the first time you've had a guy close to this high in the draft chosen that you had scouted a great deal?
This is definitely the highest I've had. I was really excited. I can't hold that back. And my whole family was. You know, both my kids jumped up when they called his name. And, yeah, it's just exciting because it just doesn't happen very often. And, you know, I don't want to take that for granted. But I also wanted, you know, this was a team effort by the Tampa Bay Rays. It wasn't just me. And, you know, a lot of things had to come together and the stars had to align in order for us to pick them. And thank God everybody else saw it the way I did.
You know, for him to be a Northeast kid, and again, you scout a good portion of the Northeast, it's rare to see Northeast kids go that high. I think the last guy who got taken this high from New York State was Manny Ramirez, which puts him in elite company, at least right out of the chute from a draft standpoint in that state. Are there any concerns at all with a kid who's from the Northeast who hasn't quite seen as much top flight competition, or is the area code games, those kind of events erase that?
Well, I mean, those are the advantage. To up here. We've, you know, the Northeast Scouts have really kind of banded together to provide an avenue for kids to show their skills against the rest of the country and the best talent. And I think we try so hard to make sure that they understand the level of difference, you know, the speed of the game change. So hopefully we're doing a great job of providing that avenue to kids and letting them separate themselves on their own. You know, I think the Area Codes and East Coast Pro are obviously two good venues for that. All the other things we do, like barnstorming. Last year we played a team from the Cape, Orleans, which was nice. We played an international team, Chinese Taipei. So we had those guys compete against good level of talent, and we evaluated them the whole way.
And obviously he performed, and hopefully someday we'll congratulate you when he gets his first opportunity at the big league level. Thanks very much for joining us for a few minutes, Tim.
Thanks, Neil. I appreciate you having me.
And that's Tim Alexander, the area scout who saw more of Garrett Whitley, the team's first-round pick, than anyone in the Rays organization. Right now, why don't we pause for station identification? You're listening to the Rays Baseball Network.
This is Tampa Bay Sports Radio, 620 WDAE St. Petersburg and 95.3 FM.
With my producer, Carlos Viteri, Neil Solon's with you on This Week in Rays Baseball, and time now to turn our attention to the Rays minor leaguers. And one team already has made the playoffs, and that's the Charlotte Stonecrabs in the Florida State League. Their manager is Michael Johns. Michael, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Neil. I appreciate it. It's a really special group of guys we have, and to be able to do it this early shows a lot about their character and what kind of ability these guys have. And just really proud of them, and it's good for the organization.
How much fun has it been for you?
It's fun every day. I mean, like I said, this is the kind of group that you should pull for, and that they're just a special group that come along every once in a while where you can go to the field and you don't have to really worry about a whole lot of things. We've got a lot of guys that are selfless on this team that like doing what they do, and they certainly make our job easier as coaches and managers and certainly throughout the organization.
I mean, obviously to win 40-plus games in the first half, you have to have a lot of talent. But as you said, to play selflessly is not an easy thing.
No, it's not, because we have a lot of good players, obviously, with our record the way it is and guys having really good years. And, you know, sometimes that can get in the way of what's really more important is the team. And it doesn't seem like these guys do that. They really like each other. They enjoy being around each other. And as much as we are around each other, it certainly helps and makes for good makeup in the clubhouse.
You've had six kids make the All-Star team, and I'm sure many more could have. Let's start with the pitchers who made the All-Star team. Jake Varea in the clinching game on Friday, he threw seven more shutout innings. He's actually, you could argue, outpitched Jose Fernandez down on rehab the two times they faced off. What has been so special about his year to you?
Yeah, how about that? That was fun to watch. That's twice his last two outings. He goes up against probably one of the best big leaguers in the game right now. So that was a pretty fast game Friday night. You know what? It seems like every outing he gets better. He's just got such great angle on his fastball. I mean, he's pitching from way up top, and it gets a very hard downward plane. It's very difficult for hitters to try to hit that. He had a really good curveball going Friday night, and really his best pitch is probably his changeup, and he didn't have much feel for it Friday, and he just kept pitching. He did it with a minimal amount of pitches. He probably could have went eight innings. But our bullpen's been so good, and he went seven the outing before that we were able to give it over to them. But, yeah, he's just been outstanding. And then it's fun for me just to watch this guy progress over the last 4 years and just to see how good he's gotten. And he deserves it all. And we talk about good kids. He's cut out of a different mold, just really, really good teammate. And one of the guys, like I said, you really want to pull for.
Won the organizational's community award last year. Buddy Borden is new to the organization, but he already has a no-hitter and also named to the All-Star team.
Yeah, he's been great. You know, he started in the bullpen. Not many people remember that. And then we were able to get him in the starting rotation because he has three quality pitches, and whenever you can combine that with good command, that usually leads to someone that's in the starting rotation. And he certainly has done everything he can to keep himself there. He throws the ball really well. He throws a heavy ball. It seems like when guys make contact, it's never good contact. He's got a really traditional 12-6 curveball that's pretty short. And he throws a good changeup. And he's a really, really, really tough competitor. He's one of the guys, when you walk out to the mound, you really don't know if he's listening to you because he's so intense out there, which is a good thing. And he stays intense for the whole time he's out there. So he's a fun guy to watch pitch because he's very, very, very competitive.
You mentioned the strength of your bullpen, and your closer, Brad Schreiber, was named to the All-Star team, too. Is this kid now a prospect?
I don't know how he can't be. This is why we do what we do. To watch this guy last year, I think in the first few months, his ERA might have been in the 10s or 11s, and I think our pitching coaches and pitching and staff and coordinators did such a great job with him, staying with him, And it seemed like over time last year he just kept getting better, and then this year he's just really taken off. You know, our closer got hurt the second week of the season, and Nick Sawyer and Schreiber has really stepped up, and I think he's perfect now with, I don't know if it's 14 or 15 saves, whatever he has, but he's really developed a nice cutter, and he's got a really, really, really good curveball. And he's one of those guys, too, that when they do make contact, it's not good contact. And he's been lights out every outing, and, you know, you can't ask for, another really good kid.
Let's look at some of the offensive players who made the All-Star team. Two of them were traded in the offseason or traded last year, and they both were guys you saw in the Midwest League, Jake Bowers and Willy Adames.
Yeah, to me, you know, I mentioned to you before, Jake Bowers was, I think, either one or the top two hitters in the league last year. And every time we watched him, he just wore us out, and we could not get him out. Just a really good player. He's a good defender. He likes playing baseball every single day. He does not want a day off. And he's got a really good swing. He's got really good bat-to-ball ability. And he's the power's starting to develop. I think he hit his fifth or sixth the other night. So he's a really good player, and he's a good teammate, and he's young. And it's fun to watch him develop over this year. And then the other kid's Willy Adames, who obviously was one of the key people in the David Price trade. And, you know, he's one of those guys that can really play shortstop. He held his own in the Midwest League, and I think this year he's become even a better hitter, a better baseball player, and a really good teammate.
And your last All-Star, a 25-year-old Marty Gant.
Yeah, what a good story he is. He comes back this year to the Stone Crabs when really he probably could go to Double-A, but there's just no room for him there with the outfielders there. And he comes back, and then he has to go on the disabled list, and then, you know, he's not playing as much as he probably should the last few weeks. And just a really good teammate again, and was having a great year. You know, I think he was hitting 309 before he really kind of injured his shoulder, and who had to limit his play at time. But he's really been a solid person to have behind those prospects where, you know, he can kind of protect Bowers and Adames hitting fifth, or he can hit second or first and be kind of a table setter for him. So, you know, to me, he's just as important part of the team as anybody.
Michael, good stuff. Congratulations again, and enjoy the rest of the first half. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, Neil. Thanks.
That is Charlotte manager Michael Johns. Coming up on This Week in Rays Baseball, we'll visit with two former Rays and with MLB's Billy Bean right after this on the Rays Baseball Network. Welcome back to This Week in Rays Baseball. I'm Yul Solons. This week, two former Rays returned to Tropicana Field. One of them, a local product in Matt Joyce, and he told me it was a bit strange to return as a visitor.
I also spent 6 years here, you know, and like you said, it was my home. So got very comfortable with playing in the stadium, the city, you know, obviously of St. Pete and Tampa have been great to me and you know, ended up calling it my home and want to stay here for a long time. So I've had a great time here.
You saw the guys in Los Angeles already, but who are you closest still to in this group? Because a lot of guys changed.
It's amazing. I mean, half the team is totally different. But I'm close with a lot of guys. You know, I've come up with Montoyo. You know, I know Rocco. You know, I've played with a bunch of these guys, Kiermaier, DeJesus, Archers. You know, seen a lot of these guys kind of blossom into really good Major League Baseball players. And they're fun to watch. They're exciting and tough to play against. You know, it's definitely a weird feeling to see him on the other sideline and face, you know, face Archer last homestand. You know, it's part of the game, and you just kind of have to get over it quick.
I guess the good thing is you don't have to face Archer in this series, since he did go on Sunday and obviously is on some sort of unbelievable run. You know, for you, when you were playing here, it was, you know, old hat. You're playing at home. How many ticket requests do you get since you're coming back for one series?
Yeah, it was probably more of a standard, you know, day-to-day thing where I left a bunch of tickets. But now it's I'm probably leaving around 15 or so. So it's not too crazy. I guess it could be worse. Just some close friends and family that want to come watch a game and stuff like that. I mean, they've seen me plenty. We'll see how it goes.
What's the adjustment been like playing in Los Angeles? Obviously a different media market. You've got two great superstars in Pujols and Trout around you.
That's a good question. Those guys have been awesome. The guys on the team have been just a blast to play with and really just a good group of guys. You know, they make it fun, they make it enjoyable, and they're very humble and, you know, they go about their work the right way. So that part's been very easy. You know, I think it's definitely been a little bit of a transition going to L.A., going to a new team. You definitely want to try and you know, do as much as you possibly can. Sometimes you can get in trouble trying to do too much. Obviously, you know, it's my free agent year, so, you know, you have those thoughts in the back of your head, and you get a little excited. You get some adrenaline, you know, and it's tough to calm down you know, just focus on the task at hand and what you're trying to do and just stay within yourself. But like I said before, it's part of the game, and it's something that you have to get over fast. But I've really enjoyed my time in L.A. so far.
Joe Maddon was a coach under Mike Socha. So are they much different in terms of the way they manage since you're now playing under both back-to-back?
I wouldn't say they're crazy different. There's definitely some similarities there. You could tell that, you know, they worked together for quite some time, and you know, definitely see some Joe and Socha, or the opposite, Socha and Joe, however you want to look at it. But Joe's quirky, you know. Joe's definitely outside the box. He's probably a lot more outside the box than Socha is. He's a little bit more old school, and you won't see any themed road trips from Socha anytime soon.
You know, you come back home, and I haven't had a chance to formally congratulate you, too. You got engaged since we saw you last.
Yeah, I did. Day before Valentine's Day. And, you know, obviously things have been going great with Britt. And it was nice. It turned out nice. Did it on a rooftop over in Tampa on the Epicurean, and turned out really nice. You know, and she's enjoying L.A. She's been out there with me. So just, you know, building a life together. It's awesome.
And that is Matt Joyce, and we certainly wish him and Brittany the best of luck with their upcoming wedding in January. Now, Matt wasn't the only former race player in town with the Angels. Cesar Ramos also dealt this offseason, said it was odd to enter the visiting clubhouse.
A little bit. Just, it's a familiar place, so I feel comfortable, but it's a little strange to be further down the tunnel. I've actually never really walked past the home side because never really had to. So it's a little different, but it's good to be back.
You were traded to the Rays. When you were traded away, you, in essence, got traded home, so to speak. What did that mean to you to be traded to an area where not too far from where you grew up?
It was exciting just because the opportunity to play at home was, you know, going to be an awesome experience for me, and then also for my family to not have to relocate across the country to stay home, and you know, with my wife, with what she went through to keep all her doctor's appointments, and now with the little one, not having to, you know, have different doctors, one doctor in California, one doctor in Florida. So it was definitely exciting for the big picture.
And in terms of, you know, obviously you had some really good moments with the Rays and some really good seasons. What were your best memories here?
Just the guys. The guys were awesome. Everyone in that clubhouse, front office, to, you know, just people here in the stadium, just the friendships that I had the last couple of years here was definitely special.
And who are you still close to on that side, and how strange was it to see them in L.A.?
Just the bullpen guys with, you know, Scott Kersey, Gomes, McGee, just all those Boxberger, the guys that, you know, I've played with the last couple of years. It was kind of funny to, you know, just be on different sides and, you know, just, you know, see them in that uniform and I'm in the new uniform, and, you know, seeing guys like Longo is always good. But it was cool to see.
You went through a lot during the course of your time. I mean, you had the honor of playing in the WBC and your family getting to see that. You started your family. Obviously, we know what Melanie went through. What among those things sticks out to you as you're you kind of look back at your time with the Rays?
I think kind of with what I went through with Melanie, just because, you know, that was obviously unexpected, but just the support from the people here it was unbelievable. It was amazing, and it really, with that support, helped myself get through not being there for the stuff she was going through, which helped, and it was just kind of special with that.
And kind of when you leave this family, so to speak, you're still sort of part of the family. So how is your family now doing?
They're great. Melanie's health is great. And Addison's beautiful 11-month-old. So just now just kind of walking around her and make sure she doesn't, you know, have any stumbles and keep her out of the emergency room. And but it's been great. They've been awesome. And it's kind of cool to see her now just kind of develop into a little person.
Not knowing how far you are from the Big A, how is it commute for you? Did you have to find a new place? What is that like?
It's anywhere from 35 minutes to an hour and a half commute, depending on what day of the week and what time and traffic. But it's, it's about a 45-minute drive to the field and 35 minutes home. So it's not bad. It's just L.A. traffic.
You played under a manager in Joe Maddon who came under Mike Socha. So has there been really much of a change for you in terms of, you know, the similar styles?
Yeah, definitely similar styles, not much of a change. So it was kind of cool to be somewhere where, it's kind of felt the same. And it's kind of funny to – my first big league manager was Bud Black, who was under Socha, and then now Joe, and now I'm actually playing for Socha. So it's kind of cool to play for the guys that all came from here.
And your bullpen role, I mean, has changed. I mean, you kind of went from long man to short man to starting to now it looks like you're kind of a set lefty guy in the bullpen. How's that adjustment been, and how have you enjoyed it? Because you've stranded a lot of runners this year.
I've enjoyed it. I mean, it's Socha gave me the opportunity to be able to pitch in those situations, and I was successful. And, you know, he feels like he has trust to put me in those situations. And so it's been great. It's been a great opportunity here. And, you know, and it's kind of what you do with the opportunity. And I'm just trying to take full advantage of, you know, the new opportunity and with the new team, and hopefully, you know, keep pitching and become a guy for them.
And that's Cesar Ramos, and we certainly wish him success back home in Los Angeles with the Angels. Now, this past Friday, the MLB Ambassador for Inclusion, Billy Beane, was in town speaking with Rays employees on a night where this organization held its first ever Pride Night. And I asked Billy Beane, now a year into his new role as Ambassador of Inclusion, what's been accomplished within the past year and what his goals are going forward.
Well, we have some big goals, and we're well into it. It's amazing how fast the first year has gone, but it's such an honor to be back in baseball and to have the support of the Office of the Commissioner. My main goal is to really establish and create a good communicative relationship with all 30 clubs. And, we're championing the workplace code of conduct and the message of acceptance and inclusion throughout the sport. And that's not only for the players on the field, but it's for the front office. It's for the people that work in the stadiums, operations, and, of course, our fans, and sending that message out. So I feel like we're really, really well on our way to doing something great.
I would ask that how much of your focus is on the field versus the front office versus the players? How do you get that balance between the two?
Well, the message moves more swiftly when I'm connected to the players, and we learned that. I visited 16 different teams in spring training, and I was on the road for 40 days. And the one thing that is a pleasant surprise is that I played for 6 years in the big leagues. I played over 10. I left as a young man, but the relationships that I established in those time, a lot of people in the operations level have invited me to come, and I think that's the most important message. Is that I'm waiting for an invitation. It's not a mandate. It's not something that we're trying to isolate what the league is not doing. It's a purely positive situation. But when I did speak to the players in the clubhouse and kept it to a point where it was about baseball, about the wonderful responsibility that goes with the privilege of playing, it seems to be embraced very, very well, and that allows the message to move into the front office environment. So my priority is to make sure all our players are equipped with understanding of, you know, what the league stands for, and then secondary is to make myself available to, you know, every organization in their front office, and that's part of the reason why I'm here today.
You came to Tampa Bay at an appropriate time, the Rays having on Friday the Pride Night here at the ballpark, and you had a chance to speak to employees. What does it mean, the types of things that the Rays are doing specifically?
Well, the Rays, and I hope all their fans know, are leading the way in baseball with Mr. Sternberg, their ownership group, Brian Aull, the president. And they signed the amicus brief, which is a support of marriage equality, which is a little beyond my message, but it's a part of, you know, something that's very important to me in my personal life. But the example that it's setting for other sports organizations, and they invited me to come Friday, which was an honor. I, you know, it was something that their Pride Night, they're one of the first teams to create that event and sponsor it directly, because I think they see that the simplicity of the message of acceptance, it's not as big an obstacle as some others might think. You know, Tampa is a wonderful city. The fan base is truly diverse. Many different, you know, communities are represented, and I'm very proud of Tampa, and that's why I'm here to support their night.
And their principal owner, Stuart Sternberg, is on the diversity committee for Major League Baseball too.
Yeah, I was very fortunate to sit down and be invited to be a part of that meeting, and I got to spend some time with Mr. Sternberg. You know, again, someone who just sees the future and understands, you know, the direction that the sport is going, what's important to our communities in the corporate workplace, and emulating that that pattern of acceptance and protection for, you know, all their employees, whether they, whatever part of the diversity spectrum that they are part of.
How far away are we from just an acceptance period and from a Major League Baseball player being accepted for who they are?
I think with great optimism, I feel like, you know, some part of our sport, it's here today. But you're never going to eliminate, you know, differences among people. You know, racism, discrimination, bias will always exist. It's getting the majority on board and understanding. And I think that the baseball family is one that is very cohesive, and they understand the privilege and how wonderful that platform is, and how influential it can be to our communities, to our young athletes, all the people listening on the radio or watching on television. And with that, it's a great responsibility. So whether that day is now, or it's a year from now, or if it's 10 years from now, it doesn't detract from, you know, the goal. And that means for us, and baseball made that statement when they brought me back, someone who was away from baseball because I wasn't sure, you know, that I would be welcome back, because I've been open about my sexuality since 2000. But all that is changing. And for me to, you know, champion this message and communicate it, it's a huge responsibility. I'm really, really optimistic about where that will go in the future.
And that's Billy Beane, MLB Ambassador for Inclusion. We certainly appreciate having him on hand this past Friday for the Rays' first ever Pride Night. Now, next week, the Rays head out on the road, and manager Kevin Cash returns to Cleveland, where he was bullpen coach a year ago. Joining us now to chat about it, broadcaster Jim Rosenhaus. Jim, thanks for being with us.
How you doing, Neil?
Good. Tell me, since you spent a couple of years with him, is it at all a surprise how well the Rays are doing from the outside, based on what he did as a bullpen coach with Terry Francona the last couple seasons?
Well, I don't think it's a surprise that he's running the club the way he is, apparently. And again, we haven't seen him yet. But I think what's a surprise is just, I know the Rays have been decimated by injuries, and with Joe Maddon leaving, you know, there were some personnel moves over the offseason, and it just seemed like there was a lot to handle there for him, so you figured it might be a real challenge record-wise. But just from the outside looking in, it appears he's done a phenomenal job in the face of a lot of adversity through the first 2 months of the season.
No doubt about it. And, you know, he'll be kind of squaring off against his mentor next weekend in Terry Francona. Hey, Terry's done that a few times against other guys before. How strange is it for him, and have you chatted with Terry about that when he's got to see Kevin Cash on the other side?
Well, they still talk a bunch, and or as much as being a major league manager allows because of their busy schedules. But they were very close when Kevin was here, and I know when he was hired and got the managerial job, a lot of people said, well, that seems like a huge leap, going from bullpen coach to major league manager. But he was so much more than that here, and that's a characteristic of Terry Francona's staff, in that he encourages not to be pigeonholed by the title. And Kevin had so much input on some of the scouting reports prior to each series, and he spent so much time with Tito. So, you know, obviously I think it'll be fun for them, but maybe not so much fun during the 3 hours of the game because they're trying to win a ball game.
Indeed. Where do you think he's missed the most? That is Kevin.
Certainly certainly the scouting report end of it, and obviously there's people there to replace him. But that was one of the reasons they brought him in initially as a bullpen coach, because of his scouting background with the Blue Jays. They were very impressed with that. And, you know, it's hard to say. I think the bullpen has been pretty good again this season. I know he had a major impact on Carlos Carrasco a season ago and helped him develop into the pitcher that he's become. So there's certain things there, and certainly Jason Barea has had an impact on certain people here. But I'm sure they miss him just from a friendship standpoint and then the skills that he brought.
Let's touch on this Cleveland team. Most of the American League is jumbled. How do you characterize the Indians' year to date?
You know, it is really hard to pin down. If you look at raw numbers, the Indians' starting rotation is 14th in the American League. But yet you look at it, and it's Corey Kluber, it's Carrasco, it's Danny Salazar, and Trevor Bauer, four power arms that have had some great games, but they've also had some games that would put them 14th in terms of ERA in the starting rotation. So that's hard to figure. They've had a hard time being consistent offensively because they haven't hit well with men in scoring position. There's some other things going well offensively, but they've really struggled with men in scoring position, and that's held them back in many games. So consistency has been a real tough thing for this team to achieve. They've missed Yan Gomes for 6 weeks due to an injury. That didn't help. But it's just an odd mix right now, and they're having a hard time stringing together an extended stretch of winning baseball.
And obviously, as you mentioned, with the rotation they have, at least the names and the swing and miss stuff they have, they certainly are capable of going on a run. From an individual standpoint, you know, from afar, it looks like Michael Brantley's having another good year, and Jason Kipnis is having a terrific year, too.
Absolutely, and they have been the two in that offense who've been consistent. And as you know, you need more than that. And they haven't had the consistency from the rest of their lineup to the point where earlier this week, Lonnie Chisenhall, who they were counting on to be a major producer in the middle of that lineup, he was sent to AAA because he had been struggling so mightily. So they're still trying to find it, but Kipnis has been absolutely tremendous. Player of the month for the month of May, with a month that was absolutely off the charts. His on-base percentage for the month was over 500. He was reaching base more than he wasn't for a full month time, and that kind of summed up his month. And Brantley has been very much the player who had such a good year last year, very consistent, and they certainly have been keys to the lineup.
Jim, good stuff. We look forward to seeing you in Cleveland, and look forward to the Kevin Cash, Terry Francona reunion.
You got it, Neil. Thank you.
Yeah, that's Jim Rosenhaus, and we thank him and all of our guests this week. Jim Rosenhaus, Billy Bean of Major League Baseball, Cesar Ramos, Matt Joyce, current Angels, former Rays, Charlotte manager Michael Johns, area scout Tim Alexander, the area scout for Garrett Whitley, the Rays' first-round pick, Rays director of scouting R.J. Harrison, and, of course, today's starting pitcher Nathan Carnes. Next week, a Father's Day edition with Brandon Guyer and much more. If you ever have anything you'd like to hear on the show, just tweet me. At Neil Solons. For producer Carlos Viteri, I am Neil Solons. Stay tuned. The Rays pregame show is coming up. Rays and White Sox, you're listening to the Rays Baseball Network.
Thank you for listening to This Week in Rays Baseball.
Driven in the air to center field. Kiermaier going back at the wall, jumps up and makes the catch.
If you missed any of the show, catch it on archive at RaysBaseball.com/radio.
Tunaloni is launched in the air, right center field. This one's on its way, and the Rays have tied it up. A homer for James Loney, and it's 5-5.
Keep it right here. The Rays pregame show is next.